You're listening to the Fit Mom Podcast, and I'm your host, Marisa Tully.
And me, Ash Iovino. Our biggest passion is helping ambitious moms like you channel the same drive you bring to your work and family into your own well-being.
This podcast was recorded in two parts. I chatted to Counselor Sharman from Mumwell in July and then again now in December. Part one, we chatted about my positive C-section birth, mental health for moms, and then a little bit more about my personal new motherhood journey. Part two, we chat about both experiencing miscarriages this year. Please note that this episode contains sensitive content related to miscarriage and fertility. Our intention is to share our personal experiences, not to diagnose, give medical advice, or cause any harm. We understand how deeply personal and emotional this topic is, and we hold space for anyone navigating fertility challenges.
I haven't seen you not pregnant.
I know. How crazy is that?
You're on the other side.
I know, I'm on the other side. And it's so funny because I was listening to bits and pieces of what we spoke about when I naively went into this journey. And oh my word.
Oh man, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's been magical. I mean, it's already recording, so we can might as well just get straight into it. While typically my son usually is pretty good with taking bottle and going down for his lunchtime nap, but he's having a jewel, and I know you've got kids to pick up soon, so let's just start.
Is he in bed now?
Yeah, he's taking his nap, but rolling around a bit. But yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I'm a bit tired, and I can't blame it on sleep. I think just physically, what the I didn't expect this, or you couldn't. I didn't know this was coming, but the mental fatigue of planning and being a mom and constantly having to have 100 tabs open. Like, my background in work is PR, and it is a very intensive industry because you are constantly on an hourly basis doing 10 different tasks at the same time. But like, nothing compares to this.
No, 100%. And I think I speak for myself, but I think you'll relate. Maybe it's an anxiety-based thing, because I mean, that is something that I've experienced. It could be a personality thing, that, you know, type A thing, but I thrive off structure and routine, especially when it's my structure and routine. And I think the first time I realized that I have to let go of that control is becoming a mom.
Totally. Totally.
Because I like to have everything planned out. Like you say, I've got my mental list is ready, but children don't fit into that plan.
No.
And then it's this constant like readjustment that is exhausting.
Totally. That's exactly it. Is I also really learned a hell of a lot about myself the past year. I didn't know I had OCD tendencies. I didn't know I was a control freak in certain areas. Yes, in work, but never to the extent that I become so obsessive. I think because so many chapters are so new, so everything's new, you know, the newborn phase and having a baby with blood in his stool and trying to figure that out, like the stress is so heightened because it's so out of my control and it's so new. And then you enter the next phase and the next phase. And I think that's something from an anxiety point of view, I constantly remind myself is that just like work, your to-do list is always going to be endless. But if I fixate on what needs to be happen today, tomorrow, the next day, I am going to drive myself crazy.
Yeah.
And when you step away, when I go on holiday, or for instance, in work circumstances, when I left a job, everything just went smoothly afterwards, or life just carried on. Yet in those moments, the boss or the situation I'm in had such an impact on stealing my energy, and I'm really trying hard for that to not be the case anymore.
I think it's the, well, that's what it is, right? It's the perception of having control. It's not actually having the control. We never have the control. But if we believe that we have the control, that's what anxiety likes, right? Like it likes us to think that we have some control. And yeah, I remember with Arlo coming home, my first night home, and I've always cooked dinner, and we have, like, since Ophelia was born, we try every evening to have dinner at the table together. And I came home from hospital and someone had graciously bought us a lasagna and I put it on the table. I was like, come on, everybody eat. And then Arlo had a meltdown and I was like, oh my goodness, we're not having dinner at the time that we're meant to have dinner and we're not all sitting down. And in that moment, it felt like my world was going to end. Like that was the most traumatic emotional moment. Reflecting on it now, I can smile, but it's that feeling of it isn't happening the way I planned it. And I had an unrealistic expectation that I could plan everything and
No,
can't.
we're all so wired so similarly. And I think just to wind back, and I think this is where I can bring in like a little bit of my birth story, is from our last conversation. Of course, we did chat about how birth does not most of the time go according to plan. We know that. And I had that mind frame and all of that. But already when I didn't have the vaginal birth, I know you and I were chatting, I think pretty much 2 days. I remember the specific days. I think it was Alessio was born on the Tuesday via C-section. The Sunday or the Saturday, I was messaging you because the Friday I'd found out I'm no longer going to be able to have a vaginal birth. And all of that just being thrown upon me when I had a pregnancy that was fairly, smooth, no health complications. And that was where the universe was starting to go, like, okay, this new journey of yours, you need to surrender. Because if you're fixating about the birth, you've got a whole rude awakening awaiting for you. And it was so true. It was just, yeah. So just to go back to when I chatted to you on the Thursday, went for my checkup. I was at the time 41 weeks, and the week before at 40 weeks, doctor said, "Don't worry, we're not going to see you again." He's hanging, he's engaged, he's low, head down. It's within days you're going to give birth. And now, from a psychological and physical point of view, I've never been so driven, typical woman, because there's someone else that I'm looking after. So I suddenly took on this role, definitely control as well. I did bio once a week. I did Pilates once a week. My strength training, everything was around prepping myself for vaginal birth. Like I knew that wasn't necessarily what was going to take place. But because things had gone well, and at 41 weeks, the week after, everything was still after the previous checkup. He then said to me, "You know, he's got some bad news," and he's pro vaginal. And he said to me, "The baby's pushed back up. We didn't know what we were having." And he just said, "Push back up, and there's just no, like, there was a big gap. His head is too big. You're putting him under risk and yourself, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going on leave tomorrow, so I can book you in tomorrow morning at like 6 a.m. And just that, I actually get like quite emotional because like I started crying, Rocco started crying, the gynae started crying. And it wasn't the, I don't want a C-section. It was that this was m what I had tried to control and prepare for so beautifully. There were no warning signs up until this point. Why can't it happen? And I think the dangerous part there was I was referring to so many stories, so many social media messaging of your body was built to birth and beautiful, stories of how people still at 42 weeks gave vaginal birth. All of this is whispering in your ears, and then you've got a medical doctor opposite you, and you're also being reminded by messaging that you said, you know, the medical system is pro C-section, da, da, da. So there's like such a conflict of not knowing who to trust. Have I done everything, or must I listen to the doctor, or must I listen to an influencer? Do you know what I mean? And so then, anyways, what I did for peace of mind, though, he said, look, if you're not ready to come in tomorrow morning, you can wait till Tuesday, see if anything changes, and come in for a checkup at the gynae who's on standby, and then and see. And I just said to Rocco, I think I was crying that whole day, obviously hormones as well. And I just said to him, you know what? I don't want to feel rushed. I don't want to actually go. And the next day was Rocco's birthday as well. So he wanted us to go in. And then, you know, Rocco and I were just like, why? Let's just take until Tuesday. And that's when the mental prep around option B was sort of being processed. I spoke to you. You specifically still told me just maybe because I was looking at a lot of videos, you were saying like look into more positive C-section stories, just expose yourself to it, because up until that point it was all, you know, how to push, how to this and that. And yeah, I still went on in the Tuesday morning, and Rocco and I filmed a video for our family, and which we only sent later, and we knew we were going in, and it was potentially going to be the day that he was born. Anyways, fast forward, gynae checked me, no difference, unless it was still like quite there was a big gap, nothing was going to change. And then I was like, okay, I'm handing myself over to the medical team, I must trust the process. And he said, okay, the nurses are going to get re you ready, and we're going to wheel you in, and by 9:15 you're gonna welcome your child. And I was like, whoa. And I've had this flash of nausea. I couldn't stand up. The paperwork was coming, then all the procedures, you know, like the systems were coming, trying to get me to sign papers. I just asked Rocco to like take over. I did suffer from low blood pressure, so all of it was taking place. Anyways, we ended up having the most beautiful C-section experience. It was like because we're in a small town, as we were wheeled in, every single nurse came up in Afrikaans and introduced themselves. They were playing Afrikaans music. It was just so comforting. And he came, oh, and this was part of why it was so beautiful, was he came out, and Rocco, of course, has the vision of baby coming out, or them lifting the baby, because we didn't know the sex. We knew names. We absolutely love the name. If it's a girl, Alessia, and if it's a boy, Alessio, two Italian names. And something that was so beautiful, which I hadn't actually spoken to any C-section delivery moms before, is how you witness the birth through your husband's eyes, so, or your partner's eyes. I was looking at him as everything was unfolding, not feeling any tugs or pulls or nothing. And I just heard a bit of a yeah, and the baby was there, and everyone was gasping, going, yeah, that's a groot baba. And just talking about the size of the baby. And I was just like, what is it? What is it? And all Rocco could get out was, it's Alessio, it's Alessio. And we were like,
Oh
so.
man.
That was so special. And then all of the prep and videos that I'd watched up until that point, and that physical like feeling of me going, I'm so ready for the pain, for the contractions, for the breath work. All of that nonsense faded. Not nonsense, but you know what I mean. It wasn't my story, so I had to get rid of it. And for a while I was sensitive in FOMO, in going, I'm never gonna be able to experience that. I'm never gonna be able to experience that beauty. But in hindsight, I'm not gonna have a V back. That's why I'm saying I will never experience it. Who knows? Who knows? But I just had such a positive experience, and then yeah, that I suppose was the birth story, and then everything that unfolded later was so much deeper and harder that it was interesting that of course, as a first-time mom, I fixated on specific things, not knowing what was still to come.
Oh, I love me a birth story.
I do too now,
I
which I never got, obviously, before.
No, I am a sucker for a YouTuber reel, any kind of birth story. Love them. I think the way you described instant motherhood is something I don't think I've thought of in that way until you shared your birth story, but so relatable how it's like, come on then, quick sticks, like into theater, and then you have a baby. Within 15 minutes, you went from pregnant to mom, and it is the most overwhelming sense of sudden. Like, I don't think there's anything that we experience, or I haven't experienced in my life, that has been so monumentally changing, but also so quick.
Totally. And of course, inverted commas, we were ready because every single day since 37 weeks, if not earlier, everyone was checking in with me. Is baby here? Is baby here? And so by the time we went in, it was 2 days before I was 42 weeks. And yeah, we had made that conscious decision just those 4 days that the doctor that we allowed ourselves when we told our gynae, who we absolutely love and respect, that time meant so much to us. And then came the talking, tying back into postpartum mental health, the 3 to 5 days baby blues. I got it, I think, day four. Also uncontrollably crying, not crying from a envisioned in my head, oh, it's just going to be sort of depressed because I've got this baby. What do I do now? Because I've heard that a lot, but mine was very much of looking at the fingers, looking at the feet, and going like, I'm responsible for this for the rest of my life, and just feeling so overwhelmed, like literally just in the shower crying. And that's where another friend of mine was checking in, just saying, you know, everyone forgets about mom after birth. It's pretty much like there's so much excitement around it. Baby's born and then crickets. And she checked in with me regularly and was just what really helped was her referring back to how she felt at that period. You know, being hurt and hearing someone else's story.
I laugh at the shower because I remember like yesterday, my I think it might have been I don't know what day post birth, and getting in the shower, and it was the same day my milk had come in. And I was standing in the shower, and I just had this overwhelming feeling of, I don't even know if there were thoughts. It was just emotion. And I think my emotions felt as full as my boobs. And I stood in the shower and I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And it was such a release of emotion and milk. And it was, yeah, that moment of complete overwhelm. And yeah, I think I also thought sort of, am I normal? Am I meant to have this experience? And it is so treasured to have, like you describe your friend, a fellow mom checking in and reflecting on their journey. And there's the saying that I'll probably butcher, but something, the best gift as a mom we can give another mom is our true story, and how precious those moments are where someone says, I had the same experience.
Totally. Oh, it's so, yeah. I think a big part of course, even the pregnancy journey is so isolating and lonely. And even as you, I mean, unless yours only one, but I can only envision with my personality, as you know, he goes to school and in a couple of years down the line, how different things trigger me and become very overwhelming. And, you know, to what extent do I open up and share and be vulnerable? And in what extent do I keep my shit together? Because that was another part of it, is you constantly trying to pick yourself up, whether it's like the beginning phases of not getting enough sleep, of, baby in pain, no idea what's going wrong, am I being a good mother, all those questions. And then the other voice going, you got this. And at the end of the day, I remember a few times Rocco coming home and I just going, you must be so impressed with me and you're so lucky to have me because I aced today with two wild dogs, with a baby, managing to get the dogs out. It's 1 degree in winter, managing to cook food, all these things. And I literally was at the same time so overwhelmed, but also so impressed with what we are able to do. And I think, yeah, that was something that I reminded myself, there's this balance between keeping your shit together and also being vulnerable and sharing. Because a lot of the times I felt like I don't actually feel like speaking about something that's happening right now. I want to keep it quite private because I think I'll just crumble. But then at the same time, knowing when do I share and when do I not, put aside my masculine energy and just lean in towards the feelings.
What do you think? And I think this is really a useful chat because I feel like what, Ophelia's 8, Arlo's nearly 6. So it feels so long ago that I was in the depths of postpartum new mom. But at the same time, as you're sharing your experience, like I'm taken straight back there. I can access those memories really quickly. But that feeling of isolation, having family and friends and support, what do you think it is about that newborn period that feels so isolating?
I think there's a big element to connection. I feel my ego, if I have to give you an answer, is I feel connected to anything that my baby does. So if he had severe allergies, all of or he wasn't sleeping, or the things that we really struggled with, I took it personally as if I was to blame. So if, for instance, mother-in-law says, oh my gosh, what's wrong with him today? Why can't he stop crying? I immediately go connected to, oh, I'm not being a good mom because I'm not getting it right, because I'm not parenting right. And because of the reaction or what he's doing, I blame myself. And that's what I think I was trying to get to earlier was saying is I know it's actually going to just get worse when he goes to school and he bites someone, he pushes someone, he, is naughty in class, and I get called in. I need to detach more, and not make his behavior directly linked to me as a parent. And sorry, back to your question. That's why I find it isolating, is because sometimes I just keep things in because you want to look like you're the mom that's got all this shit together, because no one fucking does.
Yeah, and this is going to be such an interesting conversation to rehatch in a couple of years. But I'm thinking now, I don't think, and now 8 years in, I don't think I felt that same level of isolation as I did in the newborn period. I definitely feel less of that as a mom of an older child. That and I'm reflecting sort of why, sorry. So reflecting on what's changed, and I think, and I don't think I've really accessed this thought before, but I think I felt with a newborn like I was too much to handle, too much of a burden. We can tap into that from a therapeutic perspective, but that feeling of I have an unreliable baby. Is he or she going to projectile vomit everywhere, poop everywhere, scream, cry? That I almost felt that we as a bundle, mom and baby, would be too much in a social situation or reaching out to a friend. Whereas, and maybe it's connected to your experience that you feel like one person. And now I don't have that isolation because I feel like we're two separate individuals and there's more of that disconnect. But there's something about a newborn that you feel you're all one. You're this one package of raw, of vulnerability, of openness that it's quite scary reaching out. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. And I think it's just, it's again, it's newness. It's baby and I have only known each other for 13 months. I very much feel still like I have to work on the fact that I feel judgment around certain things that, he does. And I think the beauty, if I just look at my friendship group, a lot of them are around ages of 40 and up, and kids are older and just the connections they've got with other moms and the relationships that the kids have, and your child's got a full on their own personality. I think you realize that very quickly, like when they start to speak, and you have. I mean, I'm starting to see it slowly but surely now as well. But I think that will also help me is that different that next phase of him, becoming more talkative, and having certain different mannerisms that I pick up, and again. All of this will sort of just fade if we're fortunate enough in having another child, because then energy is going to go towards that. I'm not going to spend half the amount of anxiety and stress around certain things that I had with a first child. The second child, I know just almost like you don't have capacity to even take those things into account.
On sort of that reflection space, we last chatted in this platform when you were pregnant. Other than the birth not being what you expected, in the postpartum 13 months since he was born, what has been the most sort of surprising?
The surprising, or should we just go to like the hardest part? Surprising, I feel that I am the mom that I am. I think I'm quite, a lot of, friends told me just how certain things were very overwhelming from the beginning in that newborn phase. And I think I was surprised at how easily, due to my circumstances, where we live, my age, my work circumstances, not working for someone else, I felt like that transition into motherhood was very natural and very fulfilling, and I owned it pretty well.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. I feel very much, that inherently I have this nature of loving taking care of other people. Have it with like friends when you go away for weekends, my husband, the dogs, and that came to light. And then the hardest part was by far that 4 month marker where he started getting the allergies, and he was not a baby that out of his own started sleeping through. That at the same time as, not knowing how I am hurting my baby because I was still breastfeeding was really, really overwhelming. And I went through a very, very dark period because in this town that we live in, I don't have the resources for certain foods and restaurants and takeouts and all these things to have accommodated me during that period of being so rigid with what I had to cut out. So there was a lot of stresses, and then you also that whole people pleasing you, that side of things was really tough because whenever I went for dinner at someone or when I went to go visit my parents and I said, oh, I actually can't have that spice because there's corn in it, and oh, I can't have that. Like I felt like I was a burden, and it was just everything was heavy because food is my love language. It's comfort. We Italian. It was really hard to be restrictive within that space, and it lasted a good 4 to 6 months.
What was it medically that happened at 4 months that created the change?
So at the beginning, of course, they've got certain symptoms that their bodies are, of course, just adjusting. So the cramping, all of those things, a lot of what we were experiencing was either, this is something that I learned very early on with kids, with baby, with parenthood. A symptom can be incredibly normal, like vanilla normal, and then that same symptom can be something that's like alarm bells. And like the color of
I
the
hate that for the anxiety.
it's so bad. So literally, the bad cramps, the color of the nappy, the blood, this. Anyways, what turned out at 4 months was when he started having blood in his nappies, and that's when I started seeing a specialist. Pediatrician first said cut out dairy, and then it persisted. Then I saw a dietitian, allergy expert, and she said, no, cut out soy as well. Anyways, it still persisted, and with it came cramps, and it's a conversation for another day, but just that just truly tested me. And I know that so many other people, it's colic or reflux or all a different journey, or a baby has to be hospitalized a lot. So yeah, that allergy sort of period for me was really, really tough.
No, that sounds absolutely wild, and I think it's, that link between your journey and someone else's, and our journeys can all be vastly different, but the experience often the same. I didn't experience the allergy side of things, but did experience the colic and reflux side of things. And I think the common denominator there, like actually full circle how we went when we spoke about the isolation, is the burden and then the self-blame. Ordering the spices. I remember that you'd say that you had to order your spices in if someone cooked food because your spices had to be different. And sort of that feeling of being a burden. And then the blame of, and I think many new moms feel that way, is it something I'm doing? And for a lot of us, it's sort of fictitious. But for you, with the allergy, I imagine that was so much more intense because you are being told it is you, it is what you're eating,
Yes.
which
Oh.
must have been so hard.
Something that you mentioned last or in one of our conversations was MattrSense, and I just thought if you could touch on that as well. I love it if you can share more on that.
That is such a beautiful topic. And I actually have a friend of mine who is doing her PhD thesis on this topic. It is such an awesome one. But for people that don't know, we go through adolescence, which is when we become an adult from a child, and we have the hormonal changes and the emotional changes, growing boobies, underarm hair, genital hair, acne, and then obviously the emotional side of things that are happening. And it is such a transformative age for men and women alike, but to go from child to adult. And the term MattrSense is coined in what a mother goes through from being a woman to a mother, and how we transform into someone completely new. And we go from mom to mother, and it is again like adolescence, a hormonal, a physical, an emotional complete transition into someone that we've never been before. And I think we often told, before becoming a mom, oh, it's going to completely change your life. And we get fed this narrative of this thing that's going to happen and we're going to be completely different. But until you've become a mom yourself, it is hard to imagine how that feels. And
Totally.
I think it's not becoming a mom and sort of baby coming up within 15 minutes of you having a C-section is instant. But the evolution of coming into your own as a mom, I think, takes far longer. I'm definitely changing now, 8 years down the line, where I think, oh, wow, I'm not the mom I was 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 6 years ago. So I think the evolution is takes longer, but maybe the birth is the quickest part of it all, which is crazy.
It's crazy. And another article that I was reading, just looking at symptoms for all postpartum, covering like brain fog, night sweats, belly weight, mood swings, that's very similar to the symptoms that women get when going through perimenopause. And that made me just reflect on pregnancy symptoms, which and postpartum and puberty and all these hormonal symptoms that we experience are so similar. They've just coined different, sort of chapters, experiences that we go through, and it's just never ending. And we really, really don't know enough about hormonal health, which is essentially women's health. And back to the mental side of things, post-weaning, the last time I breastfed a little bit was like a week and a half ago. Before that, I started weaning, and I was really not prepared for the emotional side effects of how I felt. That was probably the lowest. I mean, we haven't even discussed postpartum depression, but yeah, that was the lowest I felt in the postpartum period. And it was also another reminder when reading articles to be gentle towards myself, because the journey of postpartum is not just a year. It's not just 3 months. Some ladies I chat to think it's 6 weeks or 12 weeks after your checkup. So, yeah, it's still a wild journey ahead.
And the breastfeeding is such a, I mean, I think we should maybe do a whole chat around feeding, because we could speak about allergies, breastfeeding, formula, weaning. I mean, there's a whole mess that we can speak about, but I think that's exactly it. You know, everything is hormonal, physical, emotional. You know, nothing can be separated. Pregnancy, postpartum, birth, breastfeeding, perimenopause, you know, all of these things have the hormonal, the emotional, the physical aspects to it. And I think breastfeeding is a great example, and weaning, of how something seemingly simple, pop a boob and you're done, is so much more than that. So I think there's some space for a conversation around there. And yeah, like postnatal depletion, that is something I first heard about long after I was postpartum.
We go. Part two of the podcast. Did you realize that the last episode that we recorded, which obviously hasn't been released because it's being released with this one, was 5 months ago?
Sure, like half a year.
That's crazy. I thought it was max 2 months, and then I went back to listen to the episode just to rehash what we spoke about in the last in part one, and I saw that it was literally 5 months ago. So Alessia was like a full-on toddler now. If I think life was
Ah,
tough then, it's a
is he
whole
napping at
lot.
the moment?
No, so he's conversation for another day. We've started taking him half days to school. Literally, this is week two. Yeah. I
Wow.
know, quite an emotional one. A big debate in your own head whether it's the right thing or not, but he's enjoying it so far. And if all else fails, I'll pull him out and go back to au pairs. But it was just too unreliable. Like, work's picked up tremendously, and I've got two au pairs, which sounds very fancy, but they're two students in a small town. Like, that's what I get. And they, of course, have exams or going away on holiday. And I just can't work around that. So he's there for 3 hours. I pick him up, and oh my gosh, I like miss him so much. I can't wait to pick him up. And then we bond. And then by 4 o'clock, I'm tearing my hair out again and then waiting for Rocco to get home and help me. The
So
emotional roller coaster.
when you fetched him, do you have the au pair for the afternoon?
Not at the moment. All of them are on holiday. So what I've just made
Okay.
sure is I fetch him before nap time, and then he goes down and home. And then I get to work, like finish up. And by between like 2:30, 3, I have to be done, and then it's time to spend with him. But it's still full on. He's
one hyper little man, and then with the dogs on top of it, it's a handful.
Yeah, no, I can relate.
Yeah, exactly. So the last time we spoke about just my positive C-section experience, my first little bit of experience as being a first-time mom, and now I don't want this to come across as I don't know how to say it, like quite harsh, but I'm really excited to chat about the experiences that we both had and to share more about miscarriage because, gosh, I do feel like when it happened to me, which has now been 5 weeks ago, I really didn't feel as I felt supported because I knew so many of my friends who had been through it as well. And one of my friends actually said that I was quite lucky because in her case, she knew no one and she felt that it was an isolated experience and completely her fault. I don't know how you felt.
I think because now this time round, there's no or very few pregnant little ones, around me. Most of the moms in my sort of support network, we all have children similar ages, so we're sort of at a different space. No one is currently trying to conceive. So they were incredibly supportive, but not in a place where they could necessarily relate.
Oh yes. And this was a tricky one is I wasn't going to necessarily share my experience online. I feel a little bit safer in a podcast environment, especially chatting to you, but I decided to do a post on it, and which I was very much in two minds because it's such a personal experience. But something that nudged me towards doing it was seeing another friend of mine, who's in the online space as well, share her journey. It was so raw and authentic. And I realized, okay, you can have boundaries with how much you share, but at the same time, just knowing someone else has gone through it and how they're approaching it, and it's nothing once again that you've done wrong, and it's normal, it happens. It really encouraged me to do the same because I forget that the space that Ash and I are in, we are always showing, a side of us that might also make some people feel incompetent or not fit and not healthy. And of course, there's a side to us that is unhealthy. There's certain things that we do, and something like a miscarriage happened to me, and I was incredibly conscious of, cut down on alcohol, cut down on caffeine, had all the right supplements. And we've got so much more knowledge now than friends did, or you probably as well, first time around when falling pregnant. There's so much to support one's egg health and fertility that I did all of the inverted commas right things, but I still had a miscarriage. And I felt comfort in sharing that so that others can feel like they haven't done anything wrong in case they've experienced the same.
I love that sort of, that's a common thread, I think, throughout all of motherhood, is that we can do all of the stuff, and there is, we are fortunate enough in this day and age to have a lot more resources, and science-backed things. But with all of that stuff, we can do it all, and things are still very much out of our control. Whether that's planning for a hypnobirthing water birth at home that ends in a C-section, or that is organic feeding and weaning children, and then a sugary birthday party, or allergies, which so much about. There's all these things that we can try and control and do all the right things, but stuff will still happen out of our control. And I think from miscarriage to parenting teenagers, I think that's going to be a common thread for all of us.
So, yeah, so true. So to maybe just rewind back and share a little bit more, and I am putting like a little note at the beginning of this podcast episode because the conversation it's a sensitive one, and of course we're not here to offend anyone or diagnose anyone or anything like that. It's purely our personal experiences. So when Rocco and I decided, we really want to try for a second one, especially with me being 38, and Alessio, I really at the time was 16 months. I felt, or I'd stopped breastfeeding. My period had just come back and we were ready. And first cycle, I fell pregnant, which was, I felt, didn't kick in. And I think this whole, the whole phase was a bit of a blur because it happened quite quickly, which I didn't expect. And then my symptoms never progressed to the same symptoms as what I had with Alessio. And so we had a trip down to Cape Town to see the family, and we really wanted to see the gynae before then. It would only have been 6 weeks, but we wanted to see him so that when we go to the family, we can, share the news with them. And on the Saturday we were flying, on the Tuesday I went to go see him, and when he did an internal scan, there wasn't a heartbeat yet, and with the measurements, he dated that the it was only a 5 week, around about a 5 week pregnancy. And that, and when they did my blood pressure was normal. First pregnancy, it was very, very low. And I also 2 days before that appointment had this darkness feeling of what if this is not a viable pregnancy? Because the only symptom I had up until that appointment was fatigue. Extreme fatigue. So I was napping when he was going down for lunchtime nap. I was going to bed a lot earlier. I was buggered. And as I said, I didn't have anything else like nausea or that. And then when we had the appointment and he, said, come back on Thursday, let's do blood tests. Let's just see where your HCG levels are. And just so that you can get some answers before you fly. And I think also, of course, your doctor knows. It can be completely normal as well. I just want to remind everyone, because with Alessio, we also went too early for a scan and we hadn't seen a heartbeat. So everything that I'm saying, of course, once again, like we said in the other part of the episode, is like the symptom can be completely normal, or it can be something alarming. And then the Thursday when I went in, he actually called me a day before and just said, your HCG is really high, your progesterone is really high, which is great. But if it was this high, both of these numbers, we should have seen a heartbeat. So tomorrow when you come in, we'll do another scan and let's see. And that day, Rocco wasn't here. He was at a work event, which is about 4 hours away, only planning to come back the following day. And so I went to the
So there
appointment.
was 2 days in between.
Yeah, 2 days in between. And by that time, I can't say I had too much fear or thought around it. So as much as also the pregnancy, we found out immediately that I was pregnant. And so what, it was like a 3 week period if one dates it around. And so didn't have time to really celebrate or think about it too much because I'm now a mom and there's someone else taking a lot of my attention. And then when I went in for that appointment, I just, you can say you had a feeling or not, but now a lot of it makes sense. And when he did the scan, it also gave me immediate peace of mind to just see the sac was completely flat. And then in my head, I was just like, okay, not a viable pregnancy. And my gynae, oh, he is so, so sweet. He like started crying and held my hand, and that just made me so tearful and made me realize, oh gosh, like it's not just a little, science or biology little test that I'm seeing. It's a baby that we've lost. And then I phoned Rocco, and he was immediately, the doctor was like, okay, you've got three options, or this is what he presented to me. So A was coming this evening, we'll do a DNC. So you just have to be at the hospital at 6, which in my mind already, I was like, oh gosh, Rocco's not here. Who's going to take me? Like, what am I going to do? We don't have anyone close by family-wise. And then second option was take the tablets to clear out everything. And third option was just let your body do it naturally. And I didn't think too much about the other two options because I had the flight on the Saturday and because the doctor was quite like pushing towards a DNC. I went for it. And in hindsight, for my personal experience, I'm really glad I went that way. And so that when I got to Cape Town, like the healing could start, I'm no longer pregnant. Like, let's go through the process and all the feelings. And so when I phoned Rocco in an absolute state and couldn't stop crying, he was on standby, although he was on the golf course. And he,
I just said, he said to me, look, he'll make a plan and leave now, but he doesn't know if he's going to be home before 6 to take me to the hospital. Anyways, he made a plan and he managed to get back home, like fetch the dogs from doggy daycare, get the papers from the doctor, come fetch me. Thankfully, our au pair was like able to help that evening with Alessio. And we literally just went. Everything was so quick that day. And then when I was at a hospital, that realization of being like, oh gosh, I'm being wheeled into theater pregnant and being wheeled out not pregnant. And that was like very traumatic. And I think with each of those three options, pill, like body doing its natural process, or DNC, there's a traumatic element to each one of those. And I think mine was just that, going in for an operation and doctor's really sweet. The anaesthetist telling me, don't worry, you'll have a 2026 baby. The nurse praying for me. Like it was such a big process. And all my friends who had DNCs were, all of them said, don't worry, the procedure's quick and easy. And yes, it is quick and easy, but no one touched on the emotional side of it. And that was quite a thing. And then for the next 3 days, it was like a mourning and crying and very emotional. And I must say, I don't know. I think a lot of it's also the mourning of the idea that I was pregnant, the ease of knowing, oh, we've gone through the process of falling pregnant, because there's a stress in that itself. You don't know if it's going to happen, how long it's going to take.
Yes.
So all of that, the feelings that came up was like, oh, I'm going to have to go through this again. And like, will a miscarriage happen again? What did I do wrong to cause this? That emotional process lasted quite a few days, and then flew to Cape Town, saw the family, and then had an incredible 2 weeks with them where I was able to just, be away from my environment and really heal.
Yeah. Do you think that the speed at which everything happened affected your how you grieved?
Definitely, because I thought as well, and I am A type. I mean, you and I chatted, and immediately you look at, oh, when, like, how long is it going to take to fall pregnant again? And, can you conceive within your first cycle after a DNC? All of those things. So, definitely, there was an avoidance factor in typical of my behavior. And then there was also a realization that a lot of healing happened. But now, 5 weeks later, certain things trigger me. Like I spoke to my friend, very good friend, who's my neighbor, and we finally caught up because we haven't seen each other. And I just started crying when I explained this whole experience that I just shared. And then, as well as 2 days ago in this like mommy class that we take, that we go to, I also started crying when one of the moms gave me a hug. So there's definitely a lot of, and I bring it up to Rocco quite a bit because I don't want to just scrape it away or just forget about what happened. But yeah, definitely had a had an element of helping with the healing. And your side?
Well, I think I what really kind of carried me through was, and obviously I haven't spoken about this, but was almost going through it together with you. And I know I can relate to it in pregnancy when someone close to you is pregnant and you're pregnant at the same time, and there's this shared connection of what are you experiencing, what are you experiencing, and it just is that sort of like connection. And in many ways, I experienced that again going through this at a similar time to you. And had we not have spoken about your experience, I don't know if I would have been brave enough to speak about mine. But yeah, so I think our journey's sort of quite similar. It also happened very quickly, on our first month, kind of unheard of. I think I had my Mirena removed and had my first period after that and fell pregnant that first ovulation. which was non-expected. And then midway through my cycle, when I thought I would be ovulating, I had some spotting and thought, oh, this is a bit odd, but never went to pregnancy first. So with our second, it took nearly a year to conceive him. So in my head, I also thought, and I know that's not long in the grand scheme of fertility, but I kind of expected a similar trajectory that this would take a few months. So when I started spotting, and that's not something normal for me in between cycles, I didn't go to, oh, you could be pregnant, because it just felt too sudden.
Yes.
And then the spotting was on and off slightly for 4 days. And I was like, no, something's up. So I took a pregnancy test and it was positive. So instead of immediate excitement, there was already an element of anxiety of, I don't like the fact that I'm spotting. So going into it, there was already a reservation that I don't want to keep my hopes up. But then I did my first blood test, and the gynae called and said, no, your numbers are really high. This looks great. So then there was a moment of, oh, this is maybe I can feel a bit of excitement. Ian was away for work, so I was on my own with the kids. And I decided not to tell him any of this until he got back. He had limited reception. And I just thought it would be easier to have this conversation when he got back. So it was sort of like, and shared with you what was going on. And then I did my 24, 48-hour later ACG levels, and they called back and said, no, they've dropped by half. So I was like, okay, there definitely was sadness, but I think I went into my logical mind over my emotional mind and told myself, and it was definitely a defense mechanism, but told myself, well, you knew this was likely to happen from the beginning. And I went into full justification mode, not really feeling the emotions, and okay, what's next? And then was also faced with the three options. Because I was alone and primary caregiver for the two children, and Ian was away, planning and going into hospital would have, yeah, it felt like a more difficult logistically thing to arrange. So I went with body taking its natural course. And I kind of thought, because I'd been spotting for 4 days, perhaps, that process is already underway. Where I really struggled was, and I guess that's something that you're not prepared for, unless, and this was my first loss. I haven't had a miscarriage before. The unpredictability of it, you could bleed for 2 weeks, you could bleed for 6 weeks, you could bleed for 4 days. Your HCG could go back to less than five in a couple of days. It could be a couple of weeks to a month or two. Like, there's no definitive, it has ended. And I think that's a part that emotionally and physically I found really difficult, is knowing that it's not going to result in a full-term pregnancy and birth, knowing that it's ended, but it hasn't quite ended yet. And sort of that going on and on and on, and obviously then still having positive pregnancy tests, monitoring until my HCG went less than five. And it's kind of just this visual reminder all the time that your body's still pregnant. So that was, I think, the dragged out part. Everything happened so quickly, and then it was this long, laborious, excuse the pun, experience of, this waiting game. And that is the part that I think I found the most difficult to deal with emotionally.
Yeah, because you've got no control. But it's even, and it's so crazy how it's so crazy that we both experienced miscarriage at the exact like same time. And we were chatting just before that about falling pregnant, and you for the third time, me for the second time. And it's wild how it happened. And then also my experience doing the DNC, even though I've did that, and it was like, okay, cool, cleared out. No longer pregnant, body still felt pregnant. My HCG levels are still very high. If I do ovulation tests now every day, it's like very, very high. Like both lines are showing on ovulation tests. Like it's showing that I'm, yeah. So it's so interesting how your body, I've got a checkup next week, so which will be 6 weeks. So my body's definitely still having prolonged in fluctuations.
I wonder if you know this. Scientifically, I don't know how that works. If there's no fetus or embryo, what is creating the HCG? Is that a silly question?
I don't know. I don't. I think no. I don't know. But also, wait. Like, let me also say this. This is me saying I've got high HCG, not properly testing it at a medical, like at a doctor. I'm just doing ovulation tests, and my ovulation is showing that I'm positive for the past 2 weeks
I
still.
see.
And so I'm assuming with research that I've done that I've got a high HCG. It might be other hormones that are also triggering the ovulation test to be positive. I'm not 100% sure. So I'll find that out from the doctor. And then also from the bleeding aspect, it's so interesting because you and I were also chatting. So of course yours, everything came out naturally and there's different consistency. I mean, everything that was inside has to come out. And with me, even having the cleanup, I had 5 days of spotting, which I was like, this is a weird period to have now, like 4 weeks later. And then what happened after day four, there was like nothing, no spotting, nothing. And that night I woke up and I had the most horrific experience, bled through, and I bled a little bit, sorry, before I went to bed. And so I had like one of those yuck night pads that I put on. And I woke up in the middle of the night, like completely bled through it. Completely. All the way through my clothes, onto the linen, badly went to the bathroom and I've suddenly felt so nauseous and lightheaded
Oh my
and
gosh.
had like a blood clot come out. And this was even after having the DNC up. So it's so wild what our bodies go through. And then the rest of the time I'm going on day by day feeling emotionally good because I don't have that like depression and like low energy that I had from the pregnancy hormones. So I feel energized, feel good, but there are other little symptoms and niggles in my stomach, feels very bloated and still have a lot of like water retention that you have to remind yourself, oh my gosh, my body still, to a certain extent thinks it's either pregnant or postpartum.
And I think sort of from a hormonal perspective, because yes, as humans, we're obviously going to have the emotional and psychological feelings and that sort of cognitive thoughts, all of that bundled up. But there's also a hormonal process going on that is going to affect mood. And if we think about progesterone being peak at sort of implantation, early pregnancy, and then to not being pregnant through miscarriage, that progesterone is going to drop suddenly, which is also going to have an impact on mood. It's sort of like PMS on steroids, or that's how it feels.
Totally felt exactly the same. And then another interesting feedback that I got when I shared this on social media was that a lot of women who'd experienced the loss said that everyone around them, loved ones, had moved on quickly and they were still mourning. And so, of course, I think it's very different for everyone's pregnancy. And I think something that also really helped my healing, the big elements, like I said, was the fact that I knew others that had gone through it as well. So in my mind, I thought to myself, just to rationalize it and remove a little bit about the emotion because I'm so emotional, was to go, okay, I'm part of the statistics. The stats of miscarriage is incredibly high. And also when it happened to me, I was like, okay, cool. I'm part of the stats. Like I could almost remove myself from going like, it's not me. And then the other elements that sort of helped as well was that I have already got unless you're it was a healthy pregnancy and I could carry a child full term, which gave me sort of this peace of mind that, okay, let's hope that this was just a once off. This was not like a reoccurring. This is not something that, you know, genetically Rocco and I together caused, or you know, for future pregnancies. And I think that helped a hell of a lot.
I think, you know, we can't quantify a person's experience because everyone is so unique. But I agree and relate to sort of that comfort of I've done it before, I can do it again. And I do think that is a different experience for people that have a miscarriage and don't have, you know, if it's sort of a primary infertility or primary loss, you know, not having that most reassurance that I've done it. So hopefully that increases my odds of being able to do it again.
Totally.
And yeah, I think there is a if you're able to look at it from, and that's sort of what the gynae said. He called me on the Friday evening to check in how I was feeling, and he said, and it was sort of very straightforward, and that's who he is, which I appreciate. And he said, you know, out of three pregnancies, there's a chance that if you're one in four of a miscarriage, there's a good chance that, you know, if you have three pregnancies, one will end in a loss. And
It makes sense,
obviously,
right?
yeah. So, and I think for different personality types, that's either comforting or offensive. For me, you know, it was okay, this isn't abnormal. And I think if it had been an experience and the response from medical professionals were, oh, that's really odd, that shouldn't have happened, that for me would have been a lot harder to deal with. But the response from the doctors, the nurses, the gynae being like, you know, it happens, there's a really good chance that this happens, was comforting.
100%. My other friend also said to me as well, she just wished she had known someone else who'd gone through a miscarriage because it was so unspoken, like not shared. And just that anaesthetist even telling me, you know, you're going to have a 2026 baby and saying to me, our first was also a loss, was just, oh, it was just so comforting. Just again, just knowing it's not me. And that's exactly what my doctor also said when he explained to me what happened and he gave me the news or we saw the scan and he just said, I know you women try and find an answer for everything and try and look at what you've done to cause this. But of course, they see it all the time. I mean, he's inundated with women coming in and out there. So it did, yeah, for me it also gave me comfort. But I see our time's running out and we definitely obviously gonna have another podcast episode. Maybe the next one will be us both being pregnant. That will be exciting. We can put that out in the universe. But
We've
what it
never done that
no, we haven't. That's a topic we haven't tackled together. And what anything you doing for your beautiful geriatric ovaries, us and our
my granny eggs.
which I claim I own it now. It's like such an awful, awful term to call our ovaries, but just taking it.
Yeah. These dusty little eggs. Yeah, it's a great picture. No, maybe we need to visualize them as these little like spring baby eggs. Maybe that'll help. So I think there's definitely we can go. I went through the okay, like project fertility, what can I do? And one of the things that among sort of nutrition and exercise, one of the things that I'm really trying to work through from an emotional and psychological space is sort of that readiness. And you know, I can be a bit woo-hoo, but almost the visualization and the manifestation that this is something that I want and this is something that I'm ready to receive and this is something that my body can handle and I am capable of doing. Because I think we can quickly slip into the mindset of, or the loss was a miscarriage, it will happen again, it could happen again, you know, how I've got no guarantees. So I'm trying to move into a more positive mindset of, that's going to be really great when it happens, and it can happen, and I'm ready for it to happen, and just sort of changing that inner dialogue from fear to hope, I think is
Yes.
where my focus is at the moment.
That's great. And I think I'll share mine too. So aside from the COQ10 and the what else, choline and the omega-3 and all of those things that we're taking, I am also mine's also a mindset shift that I'm trying to do, not an extreme one of trying to cut back too much, like cut back on all the alcohol, cut back on the caffeine. I've done that already, and I might have a drink or two per week, but I want to make sure that when I do have a glass of wine or decide to, especially over the festive season, that I just do it like mindfully enjoying it, not with guilt attached, not with, I'm doing damage to my body, and also letting go of not having the hope that it's going to happen so soon again. Because I think so, some of friends that I spoke to went, oh, I felt pregnant the first 3 months of having a DNC, and I felt pregnant my next cycle. And that I heard a lot of. And I don't want that to impact, okay, it must happen now, second time around. So I also have a surrender factor. I know it's going to happen, it's going to fall into place beautifully. But Marisa, get rid of the idea that the clothing that Alessio had was going to fit, because this other baby was going to be 3 days after Alessio. So same season, same everything. And so, I mean, does that not kill you, like, control-wise? Like, it would have been perfect. Like, all the
It's just a rinse and repeat.
fit. Exactly. I would have been going through the exact same cycles at the same season. So I have to let go of that. I think I just have to let
Yeah.
go of, don't control it to force it to happen ASAP. That's where my mind's at.
I think that that's really hard, especially if it's not your typical experience. So for me to conceive on a first cycle, there is that peace that I have to quieten, that like, oh, maybe it'll happen the next one,
Yeah.
you know. And I think it would have been easier, maybe, if it wasn't this sudden experience, because there is a part of you that holds on to that hope and that expectation that, oh, it happened so quickly the first time, it happened so quickly this time
Totally.
too.
Totally. I also said to Rocco, you gave me, what's it, fast swimmers, but you didn't give me strong swimmers. Fuck. I don't want the
Send the
fast ones
swimmers
that
to
get there.
gym.
Yeah. Go work on it. I
But
mean, yeah.
they say, isn't there something about male and female, that female sperm are slower but live longer, and male sperm are really fast but die quickly?
Oh, yes, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I wonder now if I'd find out, because they obviously with the DNC they send everything to get tested. So I actually wonder,
Really?
yeah, just to see if there's any chromosomal, is that how you say it? It's like mismatches. If it was something like, is it just a general, miscarriage or something else? And then I was telling Rocco, what happens if, I know it was early on, 6 weeks. I don't know if this is possible, but maybe they could tell us a sex. Like, would we want to know? And I think we would. I think we would.
But you
Yeah.
don't have any results yet.
No. So I'll let you know once I've had the follow-up next week.
That's very interesting.
Interesting game. Anyways, yeah. Thanks so much for sharing and for
Thank
chatting as
you.
always. And I'm excited to release this episode to share with so many other women who've experienced the same.
And now this episode with part one and two are going to be a little bit everyone. You'll find something in here.
Exactly. We'll chat
Oh,
soon.
thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Fit Mom podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to us if you could subscribe, rate, and share this episode with a fellow ambitious Fit Mom. Chat soon.